Welcome to the Modern Mexico Podcast. I'm your host, Nathaniel Parrish. On today's episode of the podcast, we're delving into the topic of violence against journalists in Mexico. According to Amnesty International, more than 141 journalists have been killed in Mexico since the year 2000. Over the last 20 years, Mexico has earned a reputation as being the most deadly country in the world for journalists. During the administration of controversial populist Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the violence against media workers in Mexico has taken place in a context of frequent verbal attacks from the president himself. López Obrador has made denigrating reporters and accusing critics in the media of being politically motivated sellouts a central element of his communication strategy. During López Obrador's time in office, violence against journalists in Mexico has reached a historic high. In early 2023, Reuters covered the topic of journalist killings in Mexico.
Mourned by his family, Ever López Vázquez is one of 13 journalists killed in Mexico in 2022, the deadliest year on record for the nation's newsrooms. He'd published a story on Facebook accusing local politician Arminda Espinoza Cartas of corruption. Her brother was one of the two men arrested, but no one was charged over López's murder. Espinoza herself did not respond to Reuters' requests for comment. Since López's death, fellow journalists say they are more afraid to publish stories delving into the Corridor Project or ones touching on drug trafficking and state collusion with organized crime.
We'll keep on informing, but the most important thing is to stay alive. There are definitely issues you cannot address. You cannot address the topic of presidents connected to organized crime. You cannot address the topic of insecurity in the region. You cannot address those issues because they could cost you your life.
In 2024, López Obrador is now in his last year in office. In February 2024, López Obrador took the unprecedented step of doxing a New York Times reporter in response to an article investigating ties between López Obrador's inner circle and drug traffickers. NBC News covered the incident.
Tonight, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador going to extreme measures in refuting recent reports by American journalists looking into alleged ties between the president and drug cartels.
Pertenecen a las mafias del poder económico o del poder político en el mundo.
At a press conference Thursday morning, President López Obrador questioning the integrity of some U.S. media outlets and then publicly revealing the contact information for the New York Times Bureau in Mexico City.
5547.
Obrador showing a request for comment his team received this week from Natalie Kichoev, the New York Times Bureau Chief for Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. The doxing came on the day Kichoev's team published an explosive report regarding alleged efforts from U.S. officials looking into recent ties between Obrador's allies and drug traffickers.
On today's episode of the podcast, we're talking to Catherine Corcoran, the former Associated Press Bureau Chief for Mexico, and the author of a fantastic new book called In the Mouth of the Wolf, A Murder, A Cover-Up, and the True Cost of Silencing the Press. Corcoran's engaging book delves into investigating the murder of Regina Martinez, a high-profile journalist who covered the topic of political corruption in the Gulf Coast state of Veracruz. Over the last 12 years, Veracruz stands out as by far the most dangerous state in Mexico for journalists. The dynamics covered in the Mouth of the Wolf help explain the broader risks that critical journalists face when writing about organized crime and political corruption in Mexico. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nate. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So I wanted to start off by asking, what drew you into this topic?
Well, I arrived in Mexico as a full-time correspondent in 2008. And prior to that time, I had covered Mexico kind of on a chopper in, chopper out basis. And it was traditionally a pretty safe place for journalists to work, especially foreign journalists. And then all of a sudden, when I arrived, there was what I would call an explosion in journalist killings that basically made absolutely no sense. Mexico was a democracy. It was not at war. And the targets of these killings were very local journalists in very small markets, and as opposed to like Adnan Khashoggi and some of the high profile journalist killings around the world, they tended to be very high profile journalists challenging a big government like Putin's Russia or Saudi Arabia. And so I found the phenomenon obviously tragic, and but also curious. And the government at the time would say to us, oh, well, that's just because they're narcos. They're not real journalists. They're paid journalists, and they got crossways with their bosses. And that was the only explanation given. And there were really no investigations done. There was no transparency on the part of the government. And so, you know, as a journalist, I just wanted to try to explain what exactly was going on. And then when Regina Martinez was killed in 2012, that really struck me because I knew she wasn't a narco journalist. I knew her reputation as being a very honest and very aggressive journalist in terms of speaking truth to power. And we had actually, she had actually worked for the AP at one point. I had worked for the Associated Press, and I tried to hire her to work for the Associated Press on a freelance project. And so when she was killed in 2012, I knew immediately that it was something else. It was not a phenomenon of narco journalists being killed by their bosses, that these were really attempts to silence critical voices in Mexico.
So I first moved to Mexico in 2012, and I remember when Regina was killed, and I actually visited Veracruz in June of 2012, and while I was in Jalapa, another crime reporter named Victor Baez was kidnapped and killed. And over the years, I've watched this constant flow of news stories about local reporters being killed in Veracruz and in other states in Mexico. And I know that the Committee to Protect Journalists has documented 13 media workers killed in Mexico in 2022, and that was the most reported in a single year. And also in 2022, the group Reporters Without Borders ranked Mexico as the most dangerous country in the world for journalists. And looking at some of the statistics, just between 2010 and 2016, 17 journalists were killed in Veracruz. And I know that Veracruz is generally considered to be the most dangerous state in Mexico for journalists. So I think that you did a really great job of addressing this topic and in weaving in context about the political dynamics in Veracruz to the story. And I'm wondering if you can pick just one word to sum up the state level political dynamics that you investigated and wrote about.
The state political dynamics, I would say mafioso. I would say it was a criminal government, although that's two words, not one. But in the environment of the state, it was the powers that be were very mafioso.
So I think that, yeah, mafioso is a really great word for describing some of these dynamics in Veracruz, or thinking about the concept of criminal government. I think that that's also a very interesting concept that you do a great job of illuminating over the course of your book. And I think that it's important to remember that the World Justice Project ranks Mexico among the world's worst countries in terms of rule of law. And even within Mexico, Veracruz stands out. And we know that 99.8% of all murders in Veracruz go unsolved. And that's really an astounding figure. Basically, for every 1,000 murders in Veracruz, only two criminals are ever successfully prosecuted and convicted. And that's a pretty remarkable indication of institutional weakness. And for me, when I think about the word mafioso in the context of Veracruz, sometimes I think about the image of former Governor Javier Duarte, who was a notoriously corrupt and dangerous individual who always seemed to be smiling victoriously anytime he appeared in front of cameras after he was arrested in 2017. And you mentioned the concept of criminal government, and maybe Javier Duarte is a great character who illustrates that idea. And maybe the reason that he was smiling so frequently when he appeared before cameras was because the idea of spending a few years in prison seemed like a small price to pay for all of the wealth that he accumulated while in office. And he also probably knows that he's unlikely to be convicted and sentenced in connection to any of the politically motivated killings or disappearances that occurred in Veracruz while he was in office. And with that in mind, I wanted to ask, what are three words that you would pick to describe the atmosphere which reporters in Veracruz operate?
Well, there was intimidation, fear, and uncertainty. And it wasn't just on the part of reporters, but it was on the part of the citizens who lived in Veracruz under the Javier Duarte regime. Just to put a little context to the observations and the numbers that you put out there, one of the things that I discovered in the book or in researching the book is that the reason that these numbers of journalist killings were so high and the reason that they were local is because with the advent of democracy in Mexico, which is pretty much marked by the 2000 election when the PRI was ousted from the presidency for the first time in 71 years, there was a dispersion or sort of a trickle down of power in Mexico. The president previously had controlled everything, even appointed the governors of every state, and even controlled the organized crime mostly in Mexico. And with this advent of democracy, the power trickled down to more local entities like governors and like municipal presidents or mayors. And so the organized crime found itself negotiating and working with more local powers. And so in the case of Veracruz, which stayed a PRI state longer than the rest of Mexico, they pretty much operated under that old system where the governor was the strong man that controlled everything. And it became, in the case of Veracruz, also negotiated with the cartels and organized crime. And with this new model, because in the past the president of the country controlled everything, but now with these local politicians being able to negotiate and control, they were in a position to make enormous amounts of money that were never available to them before, either by collaborating with cartels or by taking bribes or by actually controlling the cartels themselves and stealing government money and disappearing rivals and all kinds of, as we keep going back to the word mafioso, so all kinds of mafia activity. And that's basically what was going on under Javier Duarte, not just him, but his cabinet. And they all made huge amounts of money in this, what I call a criminal government, either by stealing public funds or by collaborating with drug cartels, or at one point, the former president Felipe Calderon openly said that the state of Veracruz was handed over to the drug cartels. And so that's what created this atmosphere of fear and intimidation and uncertainty because the authorities were the perpetrators. So you couldn't go to the government or the police forces with a complaint if someone disappeared or if a crime occurred, because then you would receive the threats. They wanted to keep you silent. And it was basically true of the reporters. If the reporters started to delve into this intersection of where the government was working with organized crime or had even become organized crime, that was the most dangerous of all. And that is what was getting reporters killed. And Victor Baez also was a reporter who was looking at the intersections of the government and organized crime. And so it was almost like a death sentence if you were going to look into that particular type of reporting.
So intimidation, fear, and uncertainty. I think that those three words definitely sum up what it must have felt like for some of the local reporters who were working and documenting political corruption and organized crime in Veracruz over the last 10 years. And on episode 14 of the podcast, I spoke to security analyst Stephen Woodman about the issue of robberies in Veracruz's Vanilla sector. And last year, I went to Veracruz to meet with indigenous vanilla growers. And one of my biggest takeaways was how right now Veracruz is almost like a black hole when it comes to many types of crime. Local police and prosecutors simply aren't investigating and arresting the state's criminal groups. And in many cases, local journalists have simply stopped reporting on some types of crime. So, for instance, you won't see articles from local media outlets documenting all of the violent hijackings of cargo trucks that happen in Veracruz. And I do a lot of research on the topic of cargo truck hijacking in Mexico. And according to the official government data, Veracruz is not really a hijacking hotspot, but data compiled by trucking chambers and other private sector sources show that it's one of the highest risk states in the entire country. And according to some estimates, an average of 5 cargo trucks are hijacked every single day in Veracruz. But we don't see local news stories from local reporters that are documenting the constant series of robberies. And we also don't see prosecutors investigating and arresting the groups that are committing these crimes. So I think that's maybe the impact of so many years of violence against the journalists in Veracruz. And sometimes it seems to me like it's almost a twilight zone where locals know that many types of crime are occurring, but there's no public record of it, either in official crime statistics, in court documents, or in local media stories. And with that in mind, I wanted to ask you about what it was like for you to navigate this twilight zone while trying to investigate the truth about Regina's murder.
Well, it was very difficult. Because after Regina Martinez was killed, it had a very effective impact on silencing any critical reporting in the state of Veracruz. And so all the critical reporters like her either chose to self-censor for their own safety or they left the state. She was a correspondent for Proceso, the national magazine. And there were other national correspondents stationed in the state. And all of those entities like Reforma, Notimex, and others, they actually pulled their correspondents out for their safety. And so her assassination had the effect of basically silencing the critical press in Veracruz. And that happened, that persisted for several years. Although I have to say in recent years, the reporting in Veracruz actually has improved. And I know some very good independent and critical reporters doing good work there. I'm not as familiar with the situation of hijacking trucks, but I know of many projects they've done there that have been critical of the government. The problem is that they really have no impact because the government has really no interest, it seems, in solving any of these crimes. For example, they have not solved the crime. They say they solved the crime of Regina Martinez, but the person who's in jail serving a 38-year sentence, no one believes is the actual perpetrator. And so a lot of times they will just grab someone, throw them in jail and say, case closed. But the government of Veracruz, after the PRI was ousted after Javier Duarte, because he was so terrible for the state and people were so terrorized by him and his administration. And so they have voted other parties into office now. And currently there's a Morena government. We're about to have another election. But the Morena government turned out to be very weak in terms of prosecuting crime and trying to solve some of these cases, and also in going after some of these previous political figures who did commit crimes in the state. This current administration has a very hands-off policy in terms of any treatment of previous politicians in office, and also of crime in general. And I think that's a problem to point out nationally that affects journalists in a big way. The whole strategy of the president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has been to be very hands-off with the cartels. He's very much against confronting organized crime directly in the name of creating more violence. And he thinks if he just works on the underlying roots of the violence, that's the way to combat the problem. But what has really happened is that these collaborations between the political system and organized crime have increased. The corruption has increased, particularly on a local level. And that is why it continues to be so dangerous to be a reporter in Mexico. And that's why the number of killings of journalists has gone up, not down. And that's why 2022 was a record year. Because again, any reporter trying to look into real political corruption has, first of all, no backup, and second of all, no recourse. Anything that happens to a journalist happens with impunity. And so that's really what's going on in terms of political coverage for journalists and the political situation in Mexico and in many of these states, including Veracruz. And that's why it's so difficult to really, number one, report, and number two, mete out these kinds of crimes and actually bring people to justice. It's frankly just not a priority on the part of the government. And it leaves a lot of journalists terribly exposed when they try to do some really hard-hitting investigations on political corruption.
So I think that's a really great point, and something that I think you did a great job of documenting in the book is this overlap between the state level politics and organized crime. And I think that over the last 10 years, we've seen this evolution in the way we talk about organized crime in Mexico. And maybe 15 years ago, there was more of a discourse about the war on Mexico's drug cartels, or that Mexico's government was at war with drug cartels. And now the discourse is a little bit more nuanced, and we try to investigate and understand exactly how the political world overlaps with the criminal world. And as you kind of navigated that very difficult to understand landscape, at the end of your book, you mentioned kind of the crippling effects of paranoia and how it affected you while reporting. But in the next chapter, you also mention the discovery of mass graves in Veracruz and the very real threat that agents of the state and organized crime members really were kidnapping, killing, and disappearing hundreds and probably even thousands of victims in Veracruz. And one of the most interesting things about your book is that readers can go with you as you try and navigate this terrain of imagined and real dangers. And something that I thought about a lot while reading your book was how when people are speaking Spanish in Mexico, they use the word inseguridad to describe crime. And there's an English version of that word, but among English speakers, we usually think of the word insecurity as a state of mind or as an individual shortcoming. So there's this situation where in Mexico, inseguridad is associated with societal failings and real risks, whereas in English, sometimes we think of insecurity as an imagined problem or a perception. And I know that in your book, you also mentioned the case of Ruben Espinosa, who was a photographer who was brutally killed in Mexico City in 2015. And that's another case where the details of the murder are murky, and the official narrative is that he was not killed because of his work in journalism. And you mentioned the word uncertainty today, and I think that that really applies very often in Mexico. And because there are so few successful police investigations and convictions in Mexico, we have this situation where it seems like many commentators are stuck in a situation where rather than doing analysis, they're dealing with paralysis. And I think that this incredible trend of impunity in Mexico means that there's always doubt about the basic facts of many high-profile incidents. And I think that in many cases, the best analysis about Mexico is always going to differ from the official narrative in order to explain what's going on behind the scenes. But there's also a danger of seeing conspiracies behind every incident. And I think that that's something that political analysts and journalists have to navigate. But one other thing that I wanted to ask you about is in your book, you mention the reporting by local journalists in Veracruz, and also by outlets and organizations such as the New York Times, Proceso Magazine, and Mexicans Against Corruption. And I think about this recent history of investigative journalism in Mexico that you describe in your book. And I think that it played a big role in why former President Enrique Peña Nieto finished his term with a dismal 20% approval rating. And that reporting also helps explain why Mexico's next president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, won the 2018 election in a landslide. And I'm wondering, when you look at the situation right now in Mexico, if you can give President López Obrador a grade for his track record of rhetoric regarding the media in Mexico.
Yes, I can. Before I do that, I just wanted to speak to one of the points that you made about investigative reporting in Mexico. Investigative reporting in Mexico has improved dramatically in the 10 to 15 years. And one of the points I wanted to show in my book is that it was investigative reporting that actually brought down Javier Duarte and his criminal government. And so not only was the point of the book that journalism was a target so that this government could carry out its nefarious deeds, but ultimately it was journalism that brought them down. And I think that is the good news of what's happening in journalism in Mexico right now, that there's a lot more investigative journalism of the highest quality, including in Veracruz. And the problem is, and this is where we get to the grade for Andrés Manuel López Obrador, I would give him a D because he basically has used his daily press briefing to just all out attack the press and say that any critical press of his administration is orchestrated by his enemies, by his conservative enemies, by foreign governments, including the United States. And he doesn't look at the press as any kind of component of a democracy where you have a watchdog, an independent watchdog that's keeping an eye on the government. To him, he doesn't want a watchdog on the government. He's, as a populist, and this is kind of classic of a populist candidate. He knows best. He's the good guy. He's a clean guy. And he's the guy who's going to fix everything. And he doesn't need any critics. And so he has created from a national level, a very hostile environment for reporters by saying that instead of them like rooting out legitimate issues in his government that he could actually use as tools to improve his government, that they're all orchestrated by his enemies. And the reason I give him a D instead of an F is because he did one good thing, I think, for the press in Mexico. And that is he ended the huge government subsidies that the government used to pay to the media for, quote, publicity. And some of it was official and it would appear in sort of like advertisements for government programs or various things or even political advertisements. And some of it was very much under the table. But it was a system that really corrupted the press in Mexico for a long time. And for a long time, there wasn't a free press in Mexico. The press was always private organizations. It wasn't state-run like it is in other countries. But these private media organizations were very much controlled by the ruling party for 71 years, by these kinds of financial deals, so that you would get very lucrative contracts from the government if you were a newspaper or a television station. And then if you didn't report what the government wanted you to, they would take them away. And it was a huge financial hit. And so it was a system that really made the press beholden to the government in a way. And the fact that he ended those contracts and those subsidies, I think, was a great thing for the independence of the Mexican press. It also was a tremendous hardship for financing. I mean, the Mexican press is facing all the same financial difficulties that the U.S. press is and press around the world, the traditional media. The financial support for independent reporting has basically collapsed. And so that makes it more difficult for people in Mexico to do that kind of independent reporting. But it really adds to the credibility of the press. The press is not beholden or paid or tied to the government in any way now, as it had been in the past for just decades and decades under the PRI. So that, I think, was a very good development. But his rhetoric, I think, is very dangerous for the press, because he's basically giving license to anyone who wants to attack the press as the press being corrupt. And as one famous politician said in the United States, the enemy of the people. And so he's created a very hostile environment for the independent press in Mexico.
So you give López Obrador a D for his rhetoric regarding the media in Mexico. And I think that that's a pretty fair grade. And we know that the 2023 Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index ranks Mexico in 128th place among the world's worst countries in terms of press freedom. And you just mentioned another great concept. And I think that another aspect of López Obrador's legacy in Mexico is just how incredibly polarized he has made public discourse. And there are estimates that he makes around 80 false or misleading statements every single day at his press conferences. And overall, his strategy has been to insist that the media in Mexico are biased and corrupt. And there was a recent exchange at one of his press conferences that I think really highlights López Obrador's relationship with the press. A reporter asked some questions and showed data that many residents in Mexico lack access to tap water right now. And López Obrador just insisted that he had other data to show that the reporter was incorrect. And the reporter countered that her data was from López Obrador's government. And finally, López Obrador just seemed to give up on engaging and just started to complain that reporters in Mexico aren't professional. And I think that that interaction just kind of it's kind of sums up how under López Obrador, it has become largely impossible for reporters to really engage with the government on public policy issues. And I think the unfortunate lesson for Mexico's politicians is that López Obrador's combative strategy is highly effective in spite of his well-documented struggles to catalyze meaningful economic growth or address Mexico's security issues. López Obrador continues to enjoy the support of a majority of Mexicans. And I think that he has largely avoided engaging with the reality that Mexico is still dealing with very serious problems when it comes to organized crime. And right now, Mexico is considered to be the worst country in the entire world for extortion and also for violent cargo truck hijacking. And overall, López Obrador's time in office has seen a historic level of violence. And it does seem like the lesson for politicians in Mexico is that López Obrador has embraced a kind of Donald Trump-style strategy of disparaging and demonizing reporters. And the end result is that journalists now struggle to influence the public discourse with meaningful analysis of public policy that could help to hold the government accountable for its track record. So you describe some incredibly complex dynamics in your book, but in some ways it seems like the media landscape in Mexico has become even more hostile over the last few years in comparison to the recent history that you describe. I just saw a statistic that in total, 43 journalists have been killed in Mexico during López Obrador's time in office. And I think that you did an incredible job in your book of documenting the risks that reporters in Mexico face. And overall, I just want to say how much I enjoyed reading your book. And thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I often say, unfortunately, for journalists in Mexico right now, as I said, the good news is that journalism is better and more professional and more investigative than ever. But the journalists are working in the worst of conditions under verbal attacks, physical threats, and also financial difficulties in getting independent news to the people. And so I just like to point out as much as I can how brave the journalists are in Mexico who continue to do this work, because they do think it's for the public, the good of the public and the discourse and the betterment of their government. But they're up against just extreme challenges. So thank you for having me, and thank you for giving me the platform to point that out.
I wanted to take a short break to remind listeners that the Modern Mexico podcast is sponsored by República Coffee Roasters. Mexico is known for producing some of the best coffee in Latin America. In Mexico City, one of the best places residents and visitors can buy coffee is the República Coffee Roasters Café in Colonia Roma. República Roasters Coffee is also available for purchase online. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Modern Mexico Podcast. If you like what you heard in the podcast today, check out my book, Searching for Modern Mexico, which is available on Amazon. The next episode of the podcast is coming soon. Until then, hasta luego, amigos.